The Providence Journal presents Nick and Bob, the college basketball podcast for Rhode Island and around the nation, with your hosts, Kevin McNamara and Bill Koch.
Hello and welcome to the latest version of the Providence Journal's Pick and Pop podcast. This is Kevin McNamara here in Providence, getting ready to head out on the road to Indianapolis for a weekend game. But more importantly, we have live and in action as we speak, Mr. William Koch on the trail to Olean, New York. Bill, are you there?
Not quite yet. Headed due west from Buffalo, which is where you fly into when you go to Olean. And the good news is that the only precipitation in the air right now is a little bit of rain. The last time I made this drive a couple of years ago, it was in the middle of a blizzard, and it was not fun.
That was my next question. Is this your first trip to Olean? It is truly one of the world's, or certainly the college basketball trail's, garden spots, but it sounds like you've been there before, and you know what you're heading into on Friday night when the Rams play St. Bonaventure at a sold-out and super jam-packed Riley Center.
More importantly, Kevin, I am a little jealous of you being able to go to Hinkle Fieldhouse. I had my first experience out there last year on New Year's Day to watch the Friars play Butler, and it really is one of the sports cathedrals. There's no two ways about it.
Well, we're going to start with the Friars, if that's okay, because last night...
As we should.
Yeah, last night they're coming off their biggest win of the season, a 76-71 upset of the number 3-rated Villanova Wildcats. The Friars have actually played Villanova tougher than most Big East teams in the 5 years of the reconfigured conference, but hadn't beaten them at the Dunkin' Donuts Center in a while. And pretty much end-to-end, you know, Villanova made a pretty good push there late in the first half, but Providence controlled the tempo most of the way. They were physical. You know, I was saying to our boss, Bill Corey, earlier, most of the coaches who leave the Dunkin' Donuts Center, that's what they remark about, Bill, about Providence, is how physical they are. And that physicality certainly came to play last night as Villanova not only was 3 for 20 from the three-point line, but maybe more importantly, they turned the ball over 19 times. And, you know, when Providence defends, they can be a factor.
You know, I almost expected Providence to bounce back because they were humiliated by DePaul, whether they were sick or not. That was an embarrassing loss on their home floor, and as high-level athletes often do, you know, they have a certain sense of pride in their performance. They have a certain sense of pride in the type of team that they are and the type of people they are, and I think we saw it on the floor last night for 40 minutes. Like you said, Villanova, 3 for 20 from 3. That's an offense that gets about 39% of its points from three-point range, so you really stifled them there. And then, you know, I think you made a really good point, Kevin, in your Friars Journal today, your notebook. Kyron Cartwright did a much better job against Jalen Brunson this time around. The first time Brunson had his way in that matchup, and this time it was Cartwright pushing back, and really, you know, Brunson had, I guess you could say, one of his worst games of the season to date.
No, I don't think there's any question. When the All-American point guard loses the ball seven times, whether his teammates weren't catching it or he was booting it around or he was truly picked, he was picked clean a couple times, one very memorably by Isaiah Jackson, and then he went end-to-end for an and-one play. That can't happen. You know, we'll get into Villanova in a little bit here, but Providence, you know, it's funny. Both Cartwright and Bullock have had very inconsistent seasons, not as good as they were last year, really, from end to end. And yet, when they play well together, the Friars are very dangerous. You know, Jalen Lindsey shook off what they were saying were concussion symptoms to miss the DePaul game, to play all 40 minutes, play as usual, really good defense. So the wild cards with the Friars, strangely enough, are two other seniors, Cartwright and Bullock. And they both played last night. You know, Cartwright finished with 17 points, 5 assists, 3 steals in 24 minutes. And then Bullock, after a pretty blah first half, went off in the second with really a couple highlight jams and a big three-pointer, ended with 14 points and 6 assists. And, you know, Bill, we've talked about this all year long, and Ed Cooley has been outspoken about it as well, basically saying we're going to go as far as our seniors take us. And last night the seniors played.
Especially in the second half, Kevin, you make a good point there. I knew the Friars were in good shape when Rodney Bullock made a three-pointer, it was right in front of you and Billy Reynolds on the left wing, and he ran back down the court with his arms out, like, you know, sort of simulating an eagle or a plane, like he was flying. He was playing to the crowd, which isn't something that you see Rodney do very often. He's sort of a laid-back guy, not necessarily, you know, very emotive or emotionally engaged. And when you see that sort of fire out of him, you know, in particular after a couple of his dunks, he was very emotional. When you see that sort of thing out of him, I think that's a pretty good indicator of what the temperature is of the team. You know, and like you said, when he and Cartwright are both in attack mode, they're two very good options to have. The other pieces sort of fall into place. Alpha Diallo gets to sort of go at teams with his all-around game. Jalen Lindsey defends and shoots the three, and then you get enough out of Khalif Young and Nate Watson and the rest of the bench pieces. But when those two guys are the two guys at the front, it's a very different Providence team.
We're going to switch a little bit here to Villanova, and it was funny, a lot of people emailed me after the game, and then we talked today and said, oh, geez, you know, Villanova, geez, they weren't very good. Well, no, they weren't, but I think Providence had an awful lot to do with that defensively, the way they played. And pretty much Ed Cooley has I like to call it the tough twos mantra. He doesn't want to give up. He wants to give up tough twos and really shut down the three-point line. And certainly that worked wonders last night with Villanova only shooting 3 for 20. Certainly scored some points at the rim. But as long as they're contested, Cooley really doesn't have much of an issue with that. And, you know, Miles Bridges did as usual. He was 19-7. We've talked about Brunson struggling. Omari Spellman was tough inside, 11-9. But Dante DiVincenzo had 30 in the previous game. Comeback win over Butler, and he was 3 for 10 and didn't make a 3. He becomes a very, very important player with Phil Booth out, and sure enough, the Wildcats have lost 2 of 3.
Yeah, DiVincenzo is probably the igniter on that other side. You know, he's a guy who is capable of the spectacular, really, at times, you know, whether it be off the dribble or some hot shooting from deep. He never really got it going. I think just in general, you could say that, you know, just about any team will look ordinary and look flat if they don't make shots. And especially a team like Villanova, who is so perimeter-oriented, you know, relies so much on the three ball and on their guards. If the shots aren't going down and Omari Spellman doesn't have 30 or 35 or something ridiculous, they are gettable. And I also thought that, you know, Ed Cooley made some good adjustments in the second half. He had a small lineup out there. He had Malik White out there a decent amount. He gave them some good energy. And I felt like he went to pieces that sort of matched and denied what Villanova normally likes to do.
Yeah, I think they wanted to make Spellman defend away from the basket, and that's why they went small. And we've seen that smaller lineup where really Isaiah Jackson or Alpha Diallo act as the center. And I think that did, you know, help Providence be able to score a little bit more around the rim and spread the floor, and they ended up with 8 three-pointers. You know, any game where Providence is going to outscore you from the three-point line, they're going to have a chance to win, and certainly when it comes against Villanova, it's a major surprise. The win does wonders for the Friars. Obviously, as you said, coming off the DePaul loss, they certainly needed to register another big win or two to stay in that Big East race, and things are, you know, one game changes an awful lot. They go from 43 to 34 in the RPI, heading to Butler, which a win there or even maybe a loss is going to keep them, you know, in that low to mid 30s range, and really maybe more importantly, makes them 8-5 in the Big East, and you know, there's a legitimate chance that they can go deep, you know, in this Big East race. There's no reason to say, well, if they can get to 10, well, why not 11? Why not 12? You know, with the exception of Xavier, they can win, you know, every game on their you know, schedule. Butler, they've already beaten. Will be a tough game on Saturday for sure. But Seton Hall has lost 4 in a row, is really slumping. They come in here next week, and then the Providence ends the regular season at Xavier. Obviously a difficult game, and then home against St. John. So there's some gettable games left here in the regular season.
You know, I also think from the other standpoint, there's really only one game left on Providence's schedule that can do major damage to them, and that's at Georgetown. Right. That's really the only game left. that you would say could be a bad loss. And that has a lot to do with the resurgence of St. John's here, knocking off Villanova, knocking off Duke. They won a nail-biter at DePaul last night. You know, they've now crept up into the mid-60s in the RPI. Even if you were to lose to them at home, which I don't expect on senior night, it wouldn't be something fatal. Providence has done enough work now to this point where, you know, barring some kind of collapse here down the stretch, I feel like they should be pretty comfortable about going to a fifth straight NCAA tournament.
No, I agree. I think I'm not saying that they're ready to play for seeding, because that's definitely not the case. They need to keep winning games. But, you know, I keep telling people, they say, well, you know, can they get in? Can they get in? I'm almost tired of the argument. Why can't they get in with a decent seed? You know, again, win three of the last four here and go to the Big East tournament and get to the semifinals, and maybe Providence is a 7, you know, is a in the 8-9 right. game versus an 11 or the first four. Or, you know, I just think this team potentially should be better than that. Obviously, their inconsistency has been the key to the season. And the inconsistency, they will say, is because of the, you know, injuries and sickness. And, you know, hopefully they're finally over those hurdles and can just be fully healthy here for the stretch drive. But that's enough about the Friars. Back to the road. Bill, what road are you on? Do you even know what highway? It's one of those back road New York highways?
Interstate 219, actually, right now. And the only reason I know that is because of our friends at Google Maps. So thank you very much to them.
Got you. And this is, just describe it to the people, it's a true two-lane highway and maybe a couple roadie stops or a gas station along the way?
Well, we just went through the town of Ellicottville, small town, probably a couple streets, maybe one stoplight. Very quaint, exactly what you would expect, you know, from suburban small town America. You know, now I'm on a two-lane road with some mountains on the left and a couple ski lodges on the right. You know, and really, I would like, this would be the type of area I would like to come back to, you know, maybe in June or July or August, because I'm sure it's absolutely beautiful. But for 7 months out of the year, it's something of a beast to live up here, I would think.
Any cows, goats, wildlife of any way, anything along the way?
No wildlife just yet.
Okay.
Not yet.
Okay, well, maybe you'll see some in Olean tonight. You never know.
Potentially.
A little bit about Friday night's game. It's funny, Mike Vaccaro, our friend at the New York Post, is a loud and proud St. Bonnie's alum, and he's calling it the, quote, biggest game in Riley Center history. I thought that was a bit of hyperbole, but from the Bonna side, this is a huge game for St. Bonaventure, and they're going to be really excited to welcome the Rams into town.
Yeah, Bob Lanier might have something to say about that. You know, I don't know if Mike and Bob are close or they've rubbed elbows at any alumni events. But as far as I remember, St. Bonaventure was pretty good when he was there. That was, you know, 45, 50 years ago. But no, it is a hot ticket. It's a sellout already. It was long in advance. And if you're a URI fan, you think back to the end of last season when the Rams were making their run and sort of a little bit, you know, maybe on the wrong side of the bubble. You had VCU come to town. They were top 30 RPI team. Your metrics really needed a boost, and that was, you know, probably the biggest game of the season to that point, only because it was one of few chances you had left to really get a marquee win. And that's where we find St. Bonaventure going into Friday night. They've won 7 in a row. They're up to 9-4 in the league. Their RPI is in the low 40s. They have some quality wins on their resume. They have quadrant one wins over Syracuse, Vermont, and Buffalo. But to really make their case, you get the feeling that, you know, in a week A-10 this year, St. Bonaventure needs to get this one and finish strong down the stretch. And if Dan Hurley alluded to that a little bit on Wednesday at URI's practice, he said that they know what they're going to be walking into here. They know that St. Bonaventure is going to be desperate, and they're going to have to answer that.
No, no question. It'll easily be the toughest road game of the season. You know, maybe Nevada, you know, early in the year, but Nevada certainly isn't going to have the atmosphere that, Bill, you're going to see on Friday night. And, you know, we obviously saw this game once already in Kingston, and after a half, you're pretty impressed. You know, the St. Bonnie played the Rams very tough. Their two-headed monster of Matt Mobley and Jalen Adams were good. They clearly get tired. And, you know, we've seen this act over and over with URI this year where, you know, they're not blowing people out right off the top, good teams anyways, but in the second half they really wear people down. And, you know, we'll see if they can do that again on the road at the Bonnies. As you said, the Bonnies have won seven straight A-10 games for the first time ever, by the way, and are coming off a 79-68 win at LaSalle, where Mobley had 30 and 9 rebounds, and Jalen Adams had 26 points, 5 assists, 4 steals. They will say that this is the best backcourt in the A-10. I think I'll side with the Rams, but certainly the matchup of the two best backcourts, and guard play is certainly going to decide this game.
Yep, and to that end, you wonder about the status of EC Matthews. Bruised left knee against Richmond in the 85-67 win on Tuesday. Dan Hurley says he's questionable. I'd be very surprised if he played, only because you tend to err on the side of caution at this point. URI would like to win the game. It would help them with seeding, but they don't need it as badly. And as you said, they have much more depth than most of their opponents. You look at their last two games, home wins over Davidson and Richmond. The bench has scored 41 points in each game. Fats Russell has had double digits in three straight. Cyril Langevin has had double digits in three straight. This is a different team than any other we've seen under Dan Hurley, and they're probably uniquely set up to survive an injury to someone like EC or Cyril Langevin. If you think back to the start of the year, URI was able to beat Seton Hall on a neutral court at Barclays Center without both of those players.
Well, we saw it the other night. If you take one player out of the URI mix, there's other guys who URI would be hurt by than EC Matthews, more than EC Matthews. I think Jeff Doughton might be the most valuable guy on the team just because he handles the ball so much and doesn't turn it over. Matthews comes out. And Russell, I think Fats Russell might be their most explosive offensive player, just because if he gets hot, he can put up points very, very quickly and can do it both ways. He turns defensive mistakes or steals into quick plays at the other end, and he certainly did that the other night against Richmond. I'll be curious to see how Dan Hurley copes with the loss of EC Matthews. It's interesting, though, Bill, in their three losses, they've had a injury or two. I won't give them that injury excuse against Nevada because EC got hurt so late in the game. But Virginia, was that only EC? I'm trying to think who was missing in that game.
Langevin did not play in that game either.
Langevin, exactly, with the leg. And I'm hoping that EC can play, but it does make sense if he's not 100% to hold him out.
Yeah, you shouldn't risk anything at this point. Not only for his long-term future, but, you know, just in the short term, if you take care of it, even if you lose St. Bonaventure, it doesn't hurt you that badly. It's a road loss
right
against a team with a fringe 40 RPI. Losing at LaSalle next week would be much more damaging. And then you got some home games. You know, you got Dayton at home, St. Joe's at home. You figure you can win both of those. And then on the road at Davidson, which is a couple weeks from now, you would hope that, you know, EC is around 100% or close to it by then. So this could be one that he sits out, just tries to get a little healthier for the stretch because, you know, they have a lot more season to go here. They're looking beyond a month from now, certainly into the NCAA tournament, and you want to be firing on all cylinders when you get into those games.
Okay, now here's the Zen question. This doesn't have an answer, but I received this a little bit this morning. If it's good for the Rams to lose a game to take the, quote, pressure off their losing streak, yay or nay?
I've never been a big believer in that. I like winning, and I like doing it all the time. And, you know, if you have an older, mature, focused team who takes it one game at a time and doesn't just pay lip service to that but actually does it, I think that they're capable of continuing to go on ahead. As I've said on previous podcasts, if there's any coach who's uniquely qualified to handle a team that's winning every game, it could be Dan Hurley, because that's what his father, Bob Sr., did for many, many, many years at St. Anthony. You know, and there have been times this year where you or I has made the A-10 ranks look like St. Anthony made the New Jersey ranks look for a long time.
There's no doubt about that. There's been many years where St. Anthony went 27-2, 28-1, and all Bob Hurley worried about all summer long was the one or two losses. And I can tell you right now, Dan Hurley wants to be, he doesn't want to lose any games. But
nope.
I will say that this team has, I think, the veteran capability to bounce back from any type of a stub-the-toe loss. So although, as you make a point, this is no stub-the-toe team. The Bonnies are 42 in the RPI. A win here, I think a win here and then the Bonnies win out or even lose one more time and they're in the tournament or really, really close. So it's that huge of a game for St. Bonaventure. So shapes up as a big-time night. Now, Bill, last question. What's the forecast for the way home? Because the journey back to Buffalo is not an easy one if it's snowing.
We're going to
That's not a surprise, folks. We've been waiting for 18 minutes for Bill to have some phone trouble because he's out in the middle of nowhere. And this actually must mean he just entered the Olean city limits. So hopefully he has none of these troubles on game night when it's time to file his stories and follow him on Twitter. It'll be a nationally televised game on Friday night at 7 o'clock. Big-time game for the Rams, and then the Friars will be at Butler at noontime on Saturday. Bill, are you there?
I'm here.
Oh, you are there. You phased out just a little bit. I was just about to wrap things up, but we'll give a couple more minutes here. A little bit on Brown. Brown's going on the road. Brown is staying in the mix of the Ivy League race with a split, very important split at home last week against Cornell and Columbia. They now are on the road at Harvard on Friday night and then go up to Dartmouth on Saturday. A split is almost mandatory as well. I think if they can finish 8-6, 7-7 in the Ivy League, they're going to be at least in the mix for that last spot. Bill, just a little on Brown. Obviously, Brown needs Cambridge to be able to suit up. Turned his ankle, and they're hopeful that he can play this weekend.
Yeah, they split at home last weekend, lost to Cornell, and nice overtime win over Columbia. You know, where Desmond Cambridge turned his left ankle late in the second half, didn't play in the overtime, and you know, a couple other guys really stepped up for Brown. Tamanang Cho and Obi Okoli were really strong to the finish. You know, and Brown, you know, they just continue plodding along here on the right track. I think you're right, Kevin. It's just important for them to make sure that they sort of hold serve here, try to steal one on the road, you know, whether Cambridge plays or not, and then position themselves, you know, into maybe where they could go 3-1 in their last four. And try and steal that four spot in the Ivy League tournament. But, you know, still very encouraged by what I see out of Brown. Their young talent's coming along nicely. It really feels like a team on the rise under Mike Martin.
There's no question about it. It was encouraging to see Brown finish the way they did. Kind of lost control at the end of the Saturday night game against Columbia, who was coming off a win over Harvard, and then Brown be able to get it done in overtime. So, obviously, a huge weekend for the Bears. Lastly, we're going to touch on Bryant because they made news this week when longtime coach Tim O'Shea decided to retire. He's going to coach the last 2 weeks of the season, including tonight at Robert Morris, and then we'll coach in his last home game next Thursday. Bill, we've talked about this a little bit on the podcast this year. Bryant has struggled big time with only 3 wins. But I give Tim O'Shea an awful lot of credit in his retirement announcement. He basically said that he's lost the fire to coach and really has no desire to coach anywhere else. He's done it for a long time, 34, 35 years, 10 years at Bryant. And you know, a lot of coaches don't quite sense that, you know, when it's time to walk away.
Well, like you said, you know, it's a long career. He comes right out of college at Boston College and goes right into coaching, 30 odd years on the bench. All those nights in the gym, all those nights on the bus, on the road recruiting. It's not an easy life.
All right, Bill, we're going to cut you short. The line is definitely a little fuzzy. We will do our Tim O'Shea, trust it, next week when he's in his final weekend of coaching at Bryant. He probably deserves a little bit more time than Bill in the car anyway. So Bill in the car and Olean arrive safely. And everyone, thanks for listening, and check back with us next week.